A Russian missile attack in Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's hometown hits a five-story residential building, causing multiple casualties.
The authorities of Kryvyi Rih say that, unfortunately, they assume that people are still under the rubble and rescue operation is still ongoing.
Plus, the World Health Organization has serious concerns for human health in the aftermath of massive flooding from the Kakhovka Dam collapse destruction.
There are an estimated 17,000 people who have been uprooted by the flooding, and there is serious concern that many of them are likely to become ill from waterborne diseases.
And later in the program, protests in the United States demanding the release of Ukrainian children forcibly sent to Russia. Today is Tuesday, June 13th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. Russian cruise missiles overnight Tuesday in a central Ukrainian city hit a five-story residential building that was engulfed in fire. There were multiple fatalities and injuries. I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for the very latest information. Anna, I understand the building was completely destroyed and rescuers are still searching through the rubble.
It was another overnight attack across Ukraine. This time, unfortunately, the wars happened in the city of Kryvyi Rih, which is Dnipropetrovsk region. It is an industrial city. It is a home town of President Zelensky and his wife. And this city is an industrial city, and it's located quite close to the front line, if we look at the map. Unfortunately, there were five hits in the city, and two of those hits were direct hits in the buildings. So one hit was a direct hit in one of the residential buildings in the city, and another hit was in the private enterprise. For the moment, what we know is that at least 11 people have been killed, and at least 28 people are injured. They all are in the hospital, but the authorities of Kryvyi Rih say that, unfortunately, they assume that people are still under the rubble and rescue operation is still ongoing. If we look at the footage, it's really, really just a terrible image of a building completely burned down from the inside. According to Ukrainian Air Force, 11 missiles were destroyed over the night and one drone was destroyed. However, some of the missiles and drones, they hit their targets, and in general, it was 14 missiles and four drones in Ukrainian airspace today that Russia launched again during the night. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the air raid siren started.
And you mentioned that President Zelensky's parents live in that town?
President Zelensky and his wife, they were born in this town. And according to latest information that was provided, maybe something changed. But until the beginning of full-scale invasion, his parents remained in the city. It's their home. And according to what was said at the beginning of the invasion, they remained in the city. We don't have additional details, but it looks like that some members of his family definitely remain in that city. So this is additional symbolic meaning of that.
And Anna, I understand there's confirmation that a Russian major general was killed in Ukraine this week on Monday?
Yeah, it looks like that this happened at the Zaporizhia front line, Zaporizhia direction. And this major general was quite an important military representative in that area from Russian forces. And for the moment, we only have information that he was actually killed by Ukrainian army at one of the assault attacks.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Tuesday that the U.S. will deliver a new military aid package to Ukraine that totals up to $325 million and will include a wide range of rockets, missiles, and other munitions aimed at bolstering the counteroffensive against Russia that is still in its early phases. The World Health Organization is warning that thousands of people are at risk of significant physical and mental health problems in Ukraine. I spoke with Lisa Schlein in Geneva for specifics. And this is beyond even the trauma from the war going on, but from the destruction of the Kakhovka Dam in Ukraine. I understand they are scaling up aid preparation for also for possible deadly waterborne and food disease outbreaks?
That's exactly right. In fact, Dr. Jano Habic, he's the WHO representative in Ukraine, left his post in Kiev, and he arrived early this morning in Istanbul in order to drum up support from donors to urgently help people who are caught by the destruction of the dam in Kharkov. So this is what he's doing, and what's happening is right now there are a lot of people who are coordinating help on the local level, and because there are an estimated 17,000 people who have been uprooted by the flooding, and there is serious concern that many of them are likely to become ill from waterborne diseases, from like cholera and typhoid, and also mental health problems are a great concern. This because of the stress, which of course has been inevitable as a result of this catastrophic destruction of the dam, but also from everything that these people have gone through since the start of the war. They just went through a particularly bad winter where they didn't have power, they didn't have electricity, they didn't have heating, and on top of it, now they've got this flooding to contend with.
It's a lot of trauma for sure. And also we're hearing that the UN is concerned because they are have not been given guarantees yet from the Russian Federation for the safety of aid workers that need to cross the front lines to provide humanitarian assistance.
This is a big problem. WHO has been battling with this for a long time, not just WHO, but other humanitarian agencies and the International Committee of the Red Cross that had been wanting to cross over into Russian-controlled areas, and not just around this particular region, but now particularly around the Kharkova Dam, because there are tens of thousands of Ukrainians primarily in these areas that also are affected by the devastating flooding from this destruction of the dam, and there's no way of getting help to them. The WHO representative said that the organization has been in constant contact with the Russian authorities, asking for these guarantees of security so that humanitarians can cross the area, the front line, in order to provide aid to these people who desperately need it. But so far, they have received no response from the Russian authorities, which is tragic.
At a briefing Tuesday in Kyiv, UN nuclear chief Rafael Grossi said he would be heading to Ukraine's Russian-occupied Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant to assess the situation following the Kakhovka Dam collapse.
We are still in a relatively dangerous situation, and the IAEA is here to try to prevent something very bad.
He said there are also concerns about the plant's proximity to the fighting.
I'm very concerned because, of course, this is a zone, and you are well informed about the situation in general. This is quite close to the plant. There is active combat, so we are worrying that there could be, obviously, mathematically, the possibilities of a hit. We had those without any counteroffensive, so all the more so now that we have all these combats in the area that this could happen.
The International Atomic Energy Agency said Sunday it would access a site near the plant to check water levels after the reservoir lost a large portion of its water because of the destruction of the dam. U.S. President Joe Biden meets with NATO's chief Tuesday ahead of a high-pressure July summit where allies are likely to face a number of Ukraine-related challenges. This amid intensifying speculation over who will head the 31-member alliance after the current leader, Jens Stoltenberg, steps down as planned later this year. The meeting was originally set for Monday, but was postponed after Biden underwent a root canal procedure. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko said Tuesday that he wouldn't hesitate to order the use of Russian tactical nuclear weapons that are set to be deployed to Belarus if his country faces an aggression. Earlier this year, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced the planned deployment of short-range nuclear weapons to Moscow's neighbor and ally Belarus in a move widely seen as a warning to the West as it stepped up military support for Ukraine. Meanwhile, there are growing concerns in Europe as tensions tensions rise in a neighboring nation to Ukraine. Recent clashes in northern Kosovo between Kosovars and ethnic Serbs are raising concerns about a possible new conflict in the region. Valentina Vasileva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Escalating tensions between Kosovo and Serbia could delay Kosovo's future integration into the EU, according to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. This after ethnic Serbians living in northern Kosovo rioted in response to Kosovo's decision to install ethnic Albanian mayors in the primarily Serbian-populated region. The Kosovo government sent the armed police that used tear gas and stun grenades to disperse crowds. Serbia sent troops to the border with Kosovo. Member of the European Parliament Viola von Kramon-Taubadel criticized Kosovo's response to the clashes.
To put the heavy armed police forces on the ground is clearly a decision of Pristina, is clearly a decision of the government, and I think that in the end was a huge mistake. So is that endangering the entire process? I would say it will, of course, not help. And it damaged and ruined a lot of trust.
Taubadel is referring to the work of the Joint Monitoring Committee to oversee the implementation of a deal brokered in April between Serbia and Kosovo. Under the agreement, the Kosovo government will allow the ethnic Serbian population of northern Kosovo to manage themselves. And the Serbian government promised not to interfere in Kosovo's attempts to join international organizations. The deal is meant to expedite the integration of the Western Balkans into the EU, but renewed tensions have put the agreement at risk.
The compromise which we had end up now is obviously not sufficient, does not serve the interests of the people on the ground.
While European officials try to mitigate the conflict, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that rising tensions in Kosovo may lead to a huge explosion in the heart of Europe. Alexander Levchenko, former Ukrainian ambassador to Croatia, says the developments in northern Kosovo benefit Moscow.
Their goal is to have a conflict somewhere else, preferably in Europe, and divert the attention of Europeans and Americans from Ukraine. That would also allow Moscow to gain political points, presenting itself as a peacekeeper.
Ervin Foyer with the Center for European Policy Studies agrees.
And there's no doubt that in these recent developments of unrest, that you have malign forces, Russian groups, who are fomenting and trying to exacerbate the tensions.
Experts believe a speedy accession of Western Balkans into the EU could help solve the problem.
This is the only way to guarantee some long-term stability within the European Union and in its nearest neighborhood.
To help ease tensions, NATO officials are moving an additional 700 troops to the region. And U.S. officials have disallowed Kosovo from participating in ongoing military exercises in the region. For Valentina Vasileva in Brussels, Belgium, NRI's VOA News.
Ukrainian Air Force pilots say they're eager to learn how to fly F-16 fighter jets and use them in combat against Russian forces. A coalition of nations, including the United States and eight European countries, are partnering to expedite the training. VOA's Miroslava Gungadze spoke with some of Ukraine's battle-tested pilots about what's to come.
Since Russia's invasion, Ukrainian fighter pilot Rostislav Lazarenko has flown more than 330 sorties. He completed his first one on the first day of the war.
We didn't know what to expect. We were going after the column of 700 military vehicles coming from Crimea. When we made the plan on paper and walked toward the plane, my partner pilot Sasha said, "I am afraid." I am also afraid. But we must do it. Who will do it if not us? This is our faith, I said.
By the morning of February 24, 2022, Lazarenko, with his partner, had destroyed the largest Russian military convoy from Crimea. But Sasha died when his plane was shot down. Lazarenko flew through the cloud of flames but survived. Since then, the 28-year-old has gone to battle against the Russian invaders almost every day. He says his fellow pilots are poised to master the high-performance F-16 fighter jet and join him in the fight.
Knowing my team, knowing Ukrainians, I know when they will go for training. While we fight here, they will not rest. They will do everything in their power to master new planes as soon as possible and come back.
Fighter pilot Oleksiy, who did not give his last name for security reasons, is fighting shoulder to shoulder with Lazarenko.
F-16 will be break advantages of Russians fighters of Su-35 because F-16 will increase the engagement distance, and we will have ability to destroy enemy in the occupation territory of Ukraine.
They may have to overcome language differences, but Oleksiy says Ukrainian pilots already know a lot about the F-16s.
About some aircraft systems, about some flights, techniques, I think it's not a big deal for our pilots, because as our teacher says, you have to feel an aircraft, and they think feeling of aircraft in Ukrainian language, in English language, will be the same.
They have started training using flight simulators, says Ukrainian Air Force spokesman Yuri Ihnat.
The touch screens are all in the F-16. You need to understand how it works, like a child playing a computer game. Likewise, the child learns it step by step. It takes some time to adapt.
Ihnat says the trainees are ready to go.
Dozens of pilots have been identified and will go in waves, possibly to different countries, and aviation engineers who will service the equipment. They are those pilots who already know English, young pilots, and are motivated.
Ihnat says the Ukrainian pilots need about 4 months of training on the F-16s, 2 months less than previously sought. Even though much work lies ahead, they are eager to meet the enormous expectations they face in Ukraine and beyond. Miroslava Gungadze, VOA News, Warsaw.
Across the United States this past weekend, demonstrators protested the transfer of thousands of Ukrainian children to territories occupied by Russia. VOA correspondent Natasha Moskovaya has our story from Seattle.
Hundreds of Ukrainian activists in Seattle joined the Bring Our Kids Home rally, protesting the transfer of thousands of Ukrainian children to Russia or territories under Russian control. Ukrainian authorities say about 20,000 children have been unlawfully transferred and less than 400 returned since the start of the Russian invasion. Valery Golobrodko is honorary consul of Ukraine in Seattle.
As the sky is crying today, Ukrainian mothers and fathers are crying for their children. Children that were kidnapped by Russians, Moscovians, by evil regime, that wanted to exterminate our nation. They were kidnapping our children. They were trying to brainwash, indoctrinate them and turn them into Russians, but that wasn't successful.
Hearings against Moscow began last week at the International Court of Justice. Russia says children have only been removed from Ukraine on humanitarian grounds and always with the consent of their families, unless those families were missing. Anna Kirienko came to Washington State about a year ago from the Ukrainian city of Malin.
Many, many children were taken away by Russia. Even more kids have psychological trauma. They cannot sleep peacefully.
At a similar protest in Washington, D.C., Turkmen activist Chemen Ore told VOA Russian that history is repeating itself in Ukraine.
We want those children to be returned home. They belong to Ukraine, they belong to their parents, every child. The children they killed already, it's heartbreaking. It's our sadness, it's our grief.
At a demonstration in Los Angeles, Kiev refugee Irina Demchishina told VOA Ukrainian that her daughter's safety was the main reason they left their country.
Some people have no idea what is happening, or if they have heard about the war somewhere, it is so general, and they simply do not know the scale of the tragedy that is happening in Ukraine, that is happening to our people.
Back in March, the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin and Russian Commissioner for Children's Rights Maria Lvova-Belova for their alleged responsibility for the war crime of unlawful deportation and transfer of children from Ukraine. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Seattle.
According to Argentina's migration data, some 11,000 Russian women have arrived in the country since the start of 2022. Many of them were pregnant and gave birth to children in the South American country. Karina Bafrajian tells us why.
From 2020 to 2022, according to Argentinian immigration data, more than 22,000 Russian citizens entered Argentina, nearly half of them women. Many of them were in the late stages of pregnancy and gave birth to children here. Kirill Makoveev is founder of the RU Argentina agency, which was created to help Russian immigrants in Argentina. He says business is good.
Some 70,000 people consulted our website in the last year regarding giving birth in Argentina.
Argentinian law grants any child born in the country automatic citizenship. The baby's parents get permanent residency status and can later apply for an Argentinian passport. An Argentinian passport allows Russians to travel freely to 170 countries. Getting out of Russia has become more costly and in some cases impossible due to travel restrictions some countries have put in place. It also allows them to avoid being drafted to fight in Ukraine. Natalia Xenofontova moved to Argentina from the city of Ufa, Russia, while pregnant with her third child.
I have two sons. I realized that the future I had planned for them, going to study in Europe, everything being great, it all got ruined in one day. When I found out I was pregnant with my third child, we had a long think about what to do and made the decision to leave Russia.
But Argentinian authorities say that many Russian women given birth here aren't staying in Argentina. In the past year, over half of the Russians who came to Argentina, about 13,000, have since left, many of them women who gave birth in the country. In February, Florencia Carignano, the director of Argentina's immigration office, announced its decision to suspend issuing permanent residency for Russian citizens who give birth in Argentina but spend most of their time in other countries.
In January 2023, 4,523 Russian citizens entered Argentina. And these numbers are growing dramatically. We can see the growing number of incoming flights, the growing number of pregnant Russian women.
Alla and Andrei Prigolovkin stayed. They initially came to Argentina to avoid the possibility her husband might be drafted to fight in Ukraine.
I told him that I worry that he can get into mobilization, and I'm afraid that he can die on this war and I will grow our baby alone.
Natalia Xenofontova also has no plans to leave Argentina. For now, she and her husband are working remotely, learning Spanish and looking for jobs in Buenos Aires. They say this is their new home and along with it, new hope for a bright future for their children. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Washington.
And that'll do it for us today. But stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world, 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.